I'm expecting getting more members today. I've got a lot of apologies which are beyond anybody's control. One apology is the bereavement of the father of the good pastor, and so the group is not around. And Chief Nkonyane, his daughter, allow her to look in again. And I think I'm expecting two other members, if I'm not mistaken, Helen Lyne and Sarah Blatch. And then those are the ones that have not apologized, which I'm expecting. Honorable Smith also apologizes. He left yesterday for constituency and today was yesterday. And he said today won't be here. He left also yesterday for constituency engagement. So I'm expecting only two members to join us. I think they have stopped probably in traffic. Without wasting any time, I think we can start. What is important is the work that we are supposed to present in Parliament. Since we are here, and since we don't need to vote about it, we can always conduct it. Even if I was myself alone, I would have conducted it, because we don't need any quorum to conduct it. So I will allow, first of all, that we start introducing ourselves, then we can start the work of the day. Well, I'll start with my office here, my desk. I've got my committee secretary, Shana Isaac, and then I've got our content advisor, Dr. Rene Oswald Mullins, and then myself, the chairperson, most of you know me, and then I've got two members, as I've just said, who are here. I think they can introduce her themselves. It's honorable that they introduce themselves.
Good morning, everyone. I am Vincenzo in the office of the committee. Good morning, my name is Janita Blockers-Lowry.
And I now Professor Reddy then to introduce his delegation.
Good morning, Chair Noble and members of the Parliamentary Committee and staff members. I'm Professor Dyer Reddy, President of the Academy of Sciences of South Africa, and I have with me this morning two colleagues on my left, Professor Roseanne Dyer, who is the executive officer of the academy. And on her left, we have Mr. Morikin Chiwani, who is the financial manager, chief financial officer of AXA.
Mr. Chair, is that it from the delegation?
I think that's the delegation
by the DST. Okay, I'm sure for your information, it's better that they introduce themselves, the delegation. But before they introduce themselves, let me go to the, I nearly forgot our, we've got a guest here. We have decided to try and work closely with education, because the work of science and technology impacts a lot on education. We have asked where possible, and in this week, fortunately, we were able to get the researcher for the Select Committee on Education and Science here in Sophie, at least in Sophie, Veru and Strachat today, dealing with whole science and education at the same time. So for the research, I has been with us throughout this week. From Tuesday, she's been working with us.
Linda, stop please, my name.
And then the back there introduced herself as a fertilizing officer from ministry.
I'm Shava Natu, I'm the parliamentary liaison officer for DSD.
And I think at the corner there.
My name is Crespo and I'm from Sydney.
Okay. Right, DSD.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Martin Mulcahy, Special Advisor to Mr. Hanukkah.
Just warn all members and the delegates that this micro, this is our micros here, they are designed to speak close to it. Otherwise, they assume that you will always be sitting down close to it. So if you are far away from it, you can hear anything. You have got to be close like that. Thank you very much. Right, I think we can keep the ball running. Just before, you must not be disturbed if I go and sit there, because if you are presenting, I can't see from far there.
Yeah.
So it's better if I'm seated here.
Thank you very much again, the Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, for this opportunity to present details of our activities at the Academy of Science. I should clarify that along the way I'll be presenting details of activities in the year 2011 and 2012, because for one reason or another that did not take place at the time, so it's been folded into this presentation. And then our activities for the current year 2013-14. I'm going to, it's a longish presentation, but I'm going to try to keep it as concise as possible so that we have maximum time for questions and discussion. Right, so let's begin then with the mandate of ASEF. It's a dual mandate, and one way of summarizing it is that our mandate has to do with excellence on the one hand and service on the other. So first of all, to honor distinguished scholars in all fields of scientific inquiry, to honor excellence, and secondly, as far as service is concerned, to generate evidence-based solutions to national and global challenges. More particularly, if we go into the detail of that and set out the goals of ASEF, there are five goals here, and I've highlighted the key words. So first on excellence, as I have already indicated, then promotion of innovation, scholarly activity in the country, advice, effective, evidence-based scientific advice. One of our further objectives of ours is to promote science education, an interest in science education and in science generally, and an awareness and, shall we say, an excitement about science. And then finally, linkages of all kinds within the country, regionally, on the continent, and then globally. So how do our goals align with those of government? Well, there are five government goals in particular with which we have a close alignment. One has got to do with human capacity development, strengthening the skills and the resource base. Secondly, with regard to advancement across the African continent, development within the region and beyond across the continent, and cooperation. Thirdly, with regard to health, we'll see later on that health is one of the key areas in which we are active and in which we generate advice. The health profile of society, then rural development, agriculture, food security, and then finally, broadly speaking, with regard to the environment, the improvement of our environmental assets, the way in which we use them, and the way in which we interact with our natural resources. So, honourable chair and members, the Academy's work is conveniently divided into a number of programs. So you'll see five programs there with the Secretariat in the middle, which runs the show, as it were. What I'm going to do now is to take each of these programs and say a little bit about what happens within each of those. And I'll start with governance and administration. And in fact, here is the first slide in which I will touch on what we achieved during the year 2011-12. So there's a summary of some of the key achievements there. One was, I should explain that I took over as president of the Academy in October of last year, 2012. But about a year before that, I had not been on the council, and the council invited me to join it as an advisor, in a sense as a co-opted member. I served in that capacity for a good year before I became president, and found that to be very helpful indeed. We have a new, NACI appoints a representative to council, and we have a representative was appointed, that is Professor Francis Peterson. We held four council meetings in line with our schedule. We achieved an unqualified audit. In terms of our election process, we elected 35 new members to add almost 10% to our ranks, 368 members. Right now, I should say we are, I think, one or two short of 400 members. Thank you for that question. I should clarify. Under the mandate of excellence, we appoint members. Individuals who have made outstanding achievements in the sciences in the country are nominated for membership. It's in other academies they would often be referred to as fellows, so we simply call them members. We have one category. So those are individuals who typically would be in positions at universities or science councils or whatever. Well, not full-time. The full-time body would be the Secretariat, headed by the Executive Officer, and there's a staff of some 20 members there in Pretoria. Right, continuing with governance administration and coming to the present financial year, the chief objectives of the governance and administration program is first of all to promote good governance. There's quite a lot that has to be done with regard to compliance, audits, good financial and human resource management. We also promote the recognition of our members, participation in ASEP activities. So we have award dinners, we have an AGM, a process for electing new members. And then, as we will see later on, when I talk about the advice related activities of the Academy, much of this work takes place through panels, which are comprised of members of the Academy, depending on their areas of specialization. Then we are always alert to a close alignment of our activities with those goals and activities within the Department of Science and Technology, and there is good and continuing communication between our two entities. And then Governance and Administration also coordinates discussion on ASAF strategic goals. So my membership, as I indicated, we elect maybe 30 odd new members each year, but we are alert again to the need to improve or increase diversity with respect to various areas. With respect to race, we are anxious to increase our numbers, in particular of black members, female members as well. There are some science disciplines that are well represented, others less so, and we have to be aware of that. So all of that would be the subject of continuing discussions. Sustainability of ASAF, very particularly in the context of financial sustainability, so we need to be sure that we have enough funding resources to be able to carry out our various activities. The enhanced role of ASAF has to do with the fact that we are, well, have been and are at the moment engaged in discussions with Science and Technology, with the NRF as well, other organizations about, well, let's say, how best to align and locate the activities of particular entities. I'll give one example, which would be SASTAR, the South African Association for Science and Technology Advancement, which at the moment is a division within the NRF. And we are in discussion about what the optimal location is of SASTA. That's just one example. Then if I can move on now to the second program, that of scholarly publishing, and I'll start with what formed part of our activities in 2011-12. There is the National Scholarly Editors Forum, whose aim is to enhance the quality of editing of scholarly journals. These are South African journals. And ASAF hosted the 5th annual meeting of the Editors Forum. Then in 2012, the National Scholarly Book Publishers Forum was established, and they hosted, or rather ASAF hosted two meetings of that forum. Then there were a number of meetings that had the objective of carrying out rigorous peer review of South African journals. So the background to this is that there are, well, at last count, roughly 300 South African journals, scholarly journals, of which around 180 or so will ultimately be subject to this kind of rigorous peer review process. And the objective of that process in turn, apart from formally establishing these journals within an international network of journals, would be for them to come on board an open access database and facility that we have that I will say a little more about later on. So in that context, four reports were completed in 2012. Carrying on, in fact, here I have a slide with some details about the open access platform. It goes by the name of Cielo. Initially, we participated in it together with our colleagues in Brazil, the Brazilian Academy of Sciences, but now South Africa hosts its own database. ASAF hosts the South African database. And as far as the peer review process is concerned, as of 2011-12, 22 titles of journals had been peer reviewed and were placed on the open access platform. Open access means exactly that. You can log on, get onto the website, access the journals, access every article in the journals, and so on, free. Then another activity under scholarly publishing had to do with promoting good scientific writing, particularly amongst postgraduate students and young academics, young researchers. What we do is we host an online system, and during this year there were four modules that were completed, and furthermore we hosted a workshop for young medical science graduates on scientific writing. The funding for this comes from IAMP, which is the Inter-Academy Medical Council. It's an international network of medical academies. And then finding access to core commercial databases. This has got to do with the databases or the electronic access to commercial publications, which are an essential part of the work of researchers in the country. They are very, very expensive to become members of. There are some universities in the country that have signed up, and in doing so, the staff members and students of those universities have access to these journals electronically. But it's by no means comprehensive in the country, and so ASF's role here is to enter into negotiations with a view to achieving national licenses, for which would be for all of our universities, in fact for all relevant entities. The scholarly publishing program now, as far as this year is concerned, first of all, to increase the number of titles that we place onto the open access platform. This depends entirely on our own resources, the number of staff members that we have. We can devote a substantial amount of the time to this work, together with the whole business of establishing peer review panels for quality assurance of the journals. And that is something that we aim to accelerate during this year. We have a long way to go. As I said, we have 20 or 23 or so journals on the database right now. The objective as we see it would be something of the order of 180 journals, so it's significant. And then as far as scientific writing is concerned, I've spoken about the low cost to the user online system. People, students and young researchers in particular, can log on and really in that way enhance the quality of their own scientific work. Final slide on scholarly publishing has to do with the South African Journal of Science, which is a scholarly journal that is located within the Academy of Science. It's been in existence for a long time, since 1905. The Academy, well, our Academy has been in existence only since 1996, and in recent years, no local. It's local, it's got a local editor-in-chief, editorial board, and it's... It's ISI recognized and peer reviewed, and it's very much part of the system in that sense. In fact, it has an ISI impact factor of 0.78, which is not high. The impact factor measures the impact of the journal by calculating the number of times that articles have been cited, divided by, I think, the number of articles in the last 2 years, so it's just less than one at the moment, but it's rising off a very low base, so I would expect that number to increase year by year. There's a good website with a number of visits by interested researchers, and perhaps the last figure on the slide is one of the most important ones, in the sense that of the publications that are submitted for, or of the articles that are submitted for publication, 24%, so around a quarter, only a quarter actually make it into the journal. In other words, there's a high rejection rate, which is an indication, I think, of the rigor of the peer review system, and also of the standard which the journal aims to maintain. Good. Let me move on now to the policy advisory program. This is the third one. Starting off with 2011 and 12, the policy advice work that we do takes various forms, assessment studies, consensus studies, sometimes workshops and the like. We published, or completed rather, two consensus studies during that year, 2011-12. One had to do with a plan, if you like, for a low-carbon city, with a focus on Durban as a, if you like, a working example. And then secondly, a consensus study on the state of the humanities in South Africa. We also hosted a workshop at the COP17 meeting on pathways towards a low-carbon city, again, very much with the IOM technologies and the like. Then together with the IOM, the IOM is the Institute of Medicine. It's the medical academy in the United States. A report launched jointly with the IOM on the emerging threat of drug-resistant diseases, or drug-resistant tuberculosis in particular, in Southern Africa. This is becoming a major global problem. And then we also hosted a workshop with the IOM on a strategy to prepare for the long-term burden of HIV and AIDS. So these give a concrete idea of the kinds of activities in which we are involved. Continuing with our activities during 2011-12, we carried out monitoring and evaluation of the earlier consensus study report on clinical research in South Africa. This was submitted to the Department of Health, and I'm pleased to say that there is much activity on displaying part of the consensus study report, because this is always one of the big issues. Whether we initiate studies or we are requested to do studies by one department or another, the work is done, the report is submitted, but what is important then is to follow up on the uptake of that and on what happens to the advice that we offer. We published a policymaker's booklet, so this is another kind of advice, together with the NASAC Academies. NASAC is the Network of African Science Academies, and we are a member of NASAC, of course, and we do a fair amount of work either with individual African academies or otherwise under the umbrella of NASAC. This one was on science, water, and that's right, yes, they met with Barry Buck as well, did they? Yes, then we also hosted a symposium on nuclear energy safety. That symposium actually took place in the wake of the Fukushima disaster in Japan. And we had at the symposium members from Japan and from the French Academy who participated in this symposium. And then finally a workshop with the Mauritius Academy of Science and Technology on agricultural GMOs, genetic modification policy in Africa. Continuing, we also launched a policymaker's booklet on inquiry-based science education, particularly directed towards increasing the participation of girls in science in sub-Saharan Africa. And again, this was done in collaboration with our fellow NASAC academies. And then we established a standing committee on health, and at that stage obtained council approval for a standing committee on humanities which subsequently has in fact been established. The point about these standing committees is that they are able to take a strategic view of the work that we, as the Academy, should be carrying out, the advice, the policy-related advice work in the areas of health, which is one of our major legs, and then humanities. Coming to the present, 2013-14, the plan is to initiate and to promote, to facilitate evidence-based projects in health, education, humanities, biosafety and biosecurity, and also environment and energy studies. All of those form, or together I would say, form the major planks in our policy advisory program. We have started a discussion, well, the council has given the go-ahead for us to reconceptualize the notion of forum studies, and the main point about this is the following. The activities that take place at the moment, for example, the consensus studies, would be carried out by a panel comprising Academy members in the discipline concerned. The point about the forum studies is to broaden the scope, at least broaden the participation, and to consider various other sectors that should be involved in these studies, with the private sector, the public sector, industry, government, and the like. We have increased, or we plan to increase, the number of assessment studies. So assessment studies in national priority areas would be typically studies that take the form of, you know, what is the state of such and such, energy in South Africa, and the like. Also, we plan to continue to conduct commentaries on government policies. How we do this depends on the particular policy. For example, in the past, with regard to the energy, the integrated energy plan, we held a workshop, developed a detailed commentary, which we then submitted to the Department of Energy. And then the task of localization of evidence, evidence-based reports has to do with reports that have a either a regional or perhaps an international or global brief and focus and content. So the idea here is to take these reports and say, all right, you know, what should we do to these reports to make them relevant to the South African context? And that requires some work much of the time. On health, well, there's a lot going on in the area of health through our standing committee. We plan to publish the consensus study and to distribute it on improved nutritional assessment of micronutrients. This was, I should say, a matter that was highlighted during the HIV and AIDS study, where the need for such a study that has to do with nutrition, very, very particularly in the context of micronutrients, was necessary. The workshop on national health insurance, planned consensus study on reproductive health, and also one on the training of health professionals. And then we are monitoring, and we'll continue to do so through the year, monitor the implementation and the recommendations of the clinical research consensus study that I referred to earlier. Humanities, we'll be organizing an international conference there and also engaging with key stakeholders around the country to promote the humanities. Education, one of the main activities there is an inquiry-based science education. The idea is to roll this out with a number of schools participating in a pilot program in Gauteng. And then we are still seeking funding for a consensus study on revitalizing agricultural education and training. In the area of the environment, we are going to be publishing our report on technologies for a low carbon society, our assessment study of the state of green technologies in the country. And then we will be launching in Zimbabwe a policymaker's booklet on science, water and sanitation. In energy, we'll be disseminating our report on nuclear energy safety and also the report or the study on the state of energy research. And then in biosafety, we'll have a consensus study on the state of, or I should say, probably an assessment study on the state of biosafety and security. And then we'll be launching our booklet on GMOs in Kenya. The next centralized program would be that of liaison. So here we have two medals, Science Society medals. We have a postdoctoral fellowship named for Sydney Brenner, a South African Nobel laureate. We have a Distinguished Scholars Program. We host an annual Young Scientists Conference, well, we did then, and it's something that we do every year now. And also in that year, we launched the South African Young Academy of Science, SAYAS, which is an extremely active organization of young scientists, and we provide secretarial support for them. Continued our work at NOSAC. My predecessor, Professor Robin Crewe, was and still is the president of NOSAC. Capacity building initiatives in African countries, Mauritius, Zimbabwe, an MOU with the Mauritius Academy, and then we completed a study on the state of women in science and technology. That was part of the study on women in science in developing countries, launched at the AAAS, that's the American Academy for the Advancement of Sciences meeting in Vancouver. And then finally completed a study on the state of women in science and technology. That was at the request of UNESCO, Women in Science Technology in Swaziland, I should say. Coming to the present, we have been extremely active in developing our links and our activities with international academies, either with individual academies or with global networks of academies. So IAP used to be called the Inter-Academy Panel. It's now the Global Network of Science Academies. It has around 109 member countries, and they held their, IAP held its three-yearly meeting earlier this year. The G-Science meetings take place every year. It's essentially the G8 countries and the BRICS countries, their academies, which meet on an annual basis. Inter-Academy Council, it was, used to be called the Third World Academy of Sciences, hence the acronym. Acronym is now the Academy of Sciences for the Developing World, Organization for Women in Science. The Science Technology and Science Forum is a forum in Japan that attracts around 1,000 delegates every year, and the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. So this gives some idea of the extent of our international activities. Together with continuous work on capacity building, particularly on the African continent, working one-on-one with other academies, and also via NOSAC, the network in Africa. Coordinate the participation of South African scientists in these various global science activities. And this year, later this year, we'll be hosting the General Assembly and the Scientific Conference for IAMP, which is the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. Continue, I'm almost at the end there. So present here in the liaison program within our national system of innovation, but coming to South Africa now, increased engagement, government departments, parliamentary committee itself, multi-governmental cooperation in also identifying areas and then providing evidence-based solutions to critical challenges in facing society, various collaborative linkages, and then we host and we serve as the secretariat for cohort, which is the Council of Heads of Research organization. So the presidents of the NRF and so on. Young Scientists Activities, I mentioned SAS, in addition we host the annual Young Scientists Conference, and then we have various ways in which we recognize excellence in the sciences amongst our members, so particularly the Science Society Gold Medals, we award a maximum of 2, the Sydney Brenner Fellows, the Distinguished Scholars, and then we work with other science academies in the country in coordinating and hosting regional scholarly lectures in the Western Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and so on. In fact, this is the last area, communications and publications. There are 2 publications, one of which I've spoken about already, the South African Journal of Science. The other is Quest, which is a popular science journal. We publish 4 issues a year. We have a print run of 25,000 per issue, which is distributed to all schools having science departments. It has generated considerable interest. It's a high quality journal. And when I come to our activities in the present here, I'll say more about it. In fact, we will continue to promote the usage to broaden the distribution of Quest magazine. The same with SAJS, although that's different, that is a scholarly journal. Quest, really, the intention is that it should be read by teachers, by learners, members of parliament as well. And all of this with a view to promoting science awareness and really generating excitement about science and getting young people to want to go into science as careers. In fact, here are a few more details about Quest. Very particularly the lady schools, but broadly speaking, public high schools with science departments and then at national science events as well. What we are doing, because all the time we are working on improving the impact of Quest, is to formalize cooperation between ourselves, university education departments, SASTAR, the agency for and the Department of Education. Chair, at this stage, as we get on to the next slide, that is the second last slide, which is about the budget, I'd like to hand over to our Chief Financial Officer who will take us through those details. Thank you. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Yes, we are presenting our budget, which is based or worked out on the basis of the programs that the president of the academy referred to. And that is the program that focuses on administration and governance, communication, liaison, policy advisory, publications, as well as the scholarly publishing program. What we did is to try and make sure that we remain or work out our budget on the basis of the allocation that we received this time around for the year 2013-2014, as it is important that we live within our means. our baseline for 2013-14 is now standing at 20,744,000. But what we have taken cognizance of is the fact that there is some additional income that we do generate from the publications, that is the South African Journal of Science and the Quest magazine that the president of the academy referred to earlier. That income comes in the form of subscriptions as well as advertising. Small as it may be, of course, it is worth talking about and accounting for. We also do generate some income in the form of interest. Where possible, you know, we try to put some of the resources into an income or interest generating account. And therefore, that also does contribute in adding to our pool of income. We do generate income from membership fees. Members of the academy that the president of the academy referred to, they have to pay a membership fee of 200 rand per annum. Small as it may be, considering, you know, the benefits that they derive, you know, getting all these publications that we referred to, but they pay 200 rand, and therefore we make every effort to collect those. As much as there are challenges, you know, it's not easy to collect 100% of, you know, the membership fees that we expect. But for the past couple of years, we have managed to collect over 90% of those membership fees. Oppenheimer Memorial Trust will be giving us 220. That is part contribution to the award in recognition of excellence that is under the Sydney Brenner Scholarship. ASAF does also act as a secretariat to Cohort. Cohort is formed by heads of science institutions, NRF, SSRC, CSIR, you name them. They have a committee called Cohort, so ASAF does provide secretarial services to that committee, and therefore there is an admin fee, very small as well, but you know, we do talk about that. And therefore, all in all, we will be able, or we think we'll be able to collect an additional amount, close to 1 million. From other sources apart from our baseline funding. This is of course taking into account the fact that it will happen that during the course of the period there will be programs or projects that we identify that come on board that will then bring additional funding. But here we're talking of something that we are thinking about. And of course, lastly, I would want to express a word of thank you and gratitude to the Department of Science and Technology for the support that they have provided us. In this past financial year, we were destined to report a deficit of over 3 million. But, you know, DST has come on board and provided us a supplementary funding of 2.7 million. But I must still say that all the indications are that we will still report a deficit, but to a less extent, less than 500,000, sort of, instead of over 3 million. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, that brings to an end our formal presentation. So, Honourable Chair and members, we welcome any questions or comments that we might have for us. Thank you. And could I just say that, depending on the questions, Professor Dyer or Mr. Chilwani or myself would respond to those.
Thank you very much for presentation. My first comment is that condemned our air force members. But the public health correlates with that. Honourable members, this is a presentation. Let me hear what you want to clarify with you.
Thank you. I'll start with a few questions. You refer to consensus studies and forum studies and assessment studies. You try to explain. Will you please repeat? I just want to exactly understand the consensus as opposed to forum, as opposed to assessment. And do you follow up? Do you start with one kind of study and then that? Please. How do you decide when to do a consensus study as opposed to a forum study? On page 3, your goals, your fourth goal, promotion of interest and awareness of science education. How do you go about in doing this? I'm particularly interested in education. Then on your fourth slide, the second point, regional development, African advancement and international, specifically interested in Africa. Do you have links with ESA, and do you also work or cooperate with the HSRC? These two entities also focus on research in Africa and about Africa and on Africa. Then, slide 6, I just would like to know, do you still act as council advisor apart from your other positions as president and as chair? And then the members that you elected, what criteria do you use when it comes to membership? Let me ask something about your I can't remember if you refer to, yes, now I know. On your 8th slide, page 8, you refer to promoting academic scientific writing, you refer to a certain course for medical students, 4 modules in a workshop. That do these students then get a specific qualification regarding this initiative? On slide or page 12, you refer to completed 2 consensus studies, which one is the state of humanities. Are you aware of the fact that the Minister of Higher Education and Training also did a study on the status or the state of humanities? Did you collaborate or cooperate? Or yes, and then on page 13, the symposium on nuclear energy safety. Now, we have interacted with most of our entities during the past few weeks, and the focus is on nuclear energy and on solar and wind, but I didn't hear anything or really something properly done about fracking and shale gas, and which is absolutely the topic in the country at the moment since the minister lifted the moratorium in September last year, specifically in the interest of the people of the Karoo. I would like to know what you are doing about that. Then, I've asked that question. You referred to this pilot in Gauteng. Could you give us some more information on that? Elaborate on your education studies on slide, which one is that? Slide 17. You referred to 2 initiatives. Please, more on that. And yes, the energy, I've already touched on energy and specifically fracking. We refer to energy studies on slide 18. And then, you also refer to the international, you work with other international academies, and then you also focus on slide 23 on other science academies. Are you aware of the existence of the South Afrikaanse Akademie vir Wetenskappe Kunst? Do you also cooperate with them in what, which way. Thank you. And then I would just like to suggest, I can't find a list of acronyms or abbreviations in your document. I would like to suggest that you should just include a list in future, make it much more user-friendly. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shepard. I've got only one question. I want to have clarity there on the board on page 3, on improvement of rural development and food security. Can you explain more how you do it? How can you help people from rural areas as we are from rural areas?
So I've got some few things to for clarification. And on slide 12, the last paragraph, I mean, the last paragraph of slide 12, you said you are hosting, you hosted a workshop on IOM on envisioning a strategy to prepare for long-term battling of HIV and AIDS. Do you ever coordinate? In fact, yesterday we were hosting SSRC, and they've got a division that is working very full time on AIDS, even into Africa. How far do you coordinate with those activities in the Academy of Science of South Africa? And, but also, there's a very large, a very, very huge program with MRC on HIV and TB, such as UWC and in Durban, in KZN. How far do you coordinate with those programs? And on slide 13, under the symposium that we hosted on nuclear energy safety, where was this? And what was exactly, how far did you go? Because you said it was mostly related to the Fukushima disaster, which means that it should have also related to matters of climate change. And I was invited to the same topic on Fukushima in the United Nations with why I'm saying this, because it was just before COP 17, and so they had interest in me attending, because we were going to hosting COP 17, and they felt that it was a disaster for climate change, what had happened in Fukushima. How far did you deal with those issues that relate to climate? On slide 15, you have said that you initiate and facilitate evidence-based projects on health education, communities for safety and for security, environment and energy studies. I've never heard you in all your briefing referring anything to indigenous knowledge systems. And this is, I was listening today this morning, there was a live interview from SAFM. They are attending a conference which is in Boksburg. And they were very important questions about the indigenous knowledge system, the role of government, the role of the Department of Science and Technology, and so forth. What are the aims, the intellectual property? Very, very interesting session I listened to. But I see that it's omitted in our whole presentation, the importance of indigenous knowledge systems. The WIPO is also there in IT as well. I had some people being interviewed there today this morning. And then one of the things that have troubled us here in Parliament is the role of ASAF versus NAPI. I want you to tell us how do you work, how do you coordinate your activities? Are you not doing it to duplicate things? Or how do you help NAPI to advance its role to the ministry and therefore the cabinet? That's like 17. You have said that you promote inquiry-based science education in South Africa. That's very interesting. We recently visited the astronomy facilities in South. And one of the things that was a challenge in their presentation, which we tried to brainstorm. They have a program which is human capital development in science, especially astronomy students that they are upgrading to PhD level, others from high school. So they've got two bridge programs. They've got a bridge program from high school to institutions, but also from tertiary institutions to research, which is very interesting. But they said they have got the problem of a gap, and which I know it's not my first time to hear that. I also once discussed this matter with the University of Pretoria. They also had a bridging program from high school to the university, and they were taking that program, I think, 200 and something students, I think 292 students per year for the exam, for the assessment exam, if they can be able to enter the course. And they said, no, it wasn't 192, actually 192 was only what they could take. They were taking 1,500 entrants, but because of the limitation of funding, they could only enroll 192 of those 1,500. So they were complaining that if Parliament could help, because they said the little money that they have to even sponsor the 192 students was from some small sponsorship money from the Department of Science and Technology. So one of the things that was discussed very strongly there in South was to advance this region. It's a gap, it's not a gap just for South, it's a national gap. And I think that is where you people are supposed to really come in. You can't come in, we are not saying you must come in with a solution. But you can come in with a strategy leading to the solution, because we agreed, all of us, that actually this strategy, the whole gap needs a legislative element. It needs to be legislated, because the problem of advancing research in South Africa is a gap moving from high school to fishery institutions. Students don't make it because they come with poor background and they can't make it. So a lot of dropouts can start there. And I was giving an example like that, the University of Zululand. They once introduced this bridging gap. And it was working but because it was days of apartheid, they dropped it because they felt that it was not going to achieve the apartheid purposes. It was going to overturn the apartheid purpose. So they simply closed it down, but during its time, all the students that came from high school that started in the bridging course, they called it course O. They used to finish BSc in record time. And all students who came there without the bridging course, who were assessed to be ready, they would find a class of maths and science, maths or physics or whatever, about 180 students. A class of about 180 students at the start of BSc. But second year level, they only have 5. Third year level, they have 2 or 1. It was quite a... So we're discussing all these issues. And we're saying the bridging course is very important, but it needs a strategy, a technical strategy that comes from the scholars like yourselves, how it can be done coordinatedly and systematically. And then it must be brought to the legislative arm, like Parliament, where we can then legislate it into that it should be funded systematically as part of education. Because for now, these are just trial and error methods of different efforts of institutions rather than national efforts. So that's where I think you really come in to provide the technical strategy of how this can be done better so that it can be legislated and become part of the education system. The last one, under the slide, 20, that is where you went a little bit wrong. Your numbers are very not discernible. I think it's 23. Under promote young scientist activities. I usually attend the International Astronautical Federation. And one of the things I come across with, which is always a challenge, is that there is no input from South Africa. And they have asked me a number of times that at least I must submit 12 names per year. At least they are able to sponsor the students that can be developed in the astronautics and matters related to astronomy. How far do you work with that? Because they've got a young scientist session there. And you find all European and American children are there participating, PhDs, postdocs. It's a very, very big session which we sometimes even attend ourselves, you know, to familiarize and what you see the students doing. I can remember one of the young ladies from the United States was presenting a postdoctoral model of how they transport things to the space station. What new model she has come up with to make it easier for the transportation of goods, cargo from the Earth to space. Very interesting. So those are my questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So those are all the questions. we'll distribute these with the responses between us. Professor Diabic, would you like to kick off the first few? And then perhaps I could come in on starting with there's a very specific question about my role as a council advisor and my responsibility.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Coming to Member Clapper's questions, ideas and order. First one was a query about the difference between the various studies that we undertake. So a consensus study is probably the strongest form of study that an academy can undertake. It's modeled on training that we receive from the U.S. National Academies, which has been in existence for many, many years. It's a specific academy model whereby one appoints a panel of experts, and this panel deliberates on a particular topic, and through the process of the deliberations they reach a consensus, and then one publishes a report with very strong recommendations. So in a way this relates very much to the very final question of the chairperson about AFIF undertaking studies on the gap between high school and university and research. If we had undertaken a consensus study like that where we issued recommendations, it would be very easy to have recommendations that could then influence policy. What we did in that case was we did have a study on science education. It was actually called Minding the Gap, but it was a forum study. And a forum study is much like a workshop, whereby you bring experts together and they present papers and then publishes a proceedings report. So the objective of that is really just to air the different views and opinions, but not to come up with consensus recommendations. So it's a less strong way of influencing policy. So I think the challenge for us is perhaps to convert our forum studies into consensus studies so we can be sure that we do influence policy. The third form is the assessment study, which we've just started, and that is really, as Professor Reddy explained, where we're doing studies assessing the state of, and it is anticipated that these kinds of studies will be conducted on a regular basis. Perhaps not annually, but every few years. So I hope that addresses that.
What happens to the results?
With the results of each of the studies? To date, we actually haven't published an assessment study. We're in the process of undertaking three. But what will happen is that a report will be published, and then it will be then given to the sponsor, and in most cases it's the Department of Science and Technology, and then distributed very widely to our members and stakeholders, and publicly available on our website in an open access format. And we would then, as the secretariat, work to ensure that any recommendations that were made were translated and uptaken by policymakers as best as we can do so. The second question related to the goal of our second goal, which was to raise awareness about science education, and I think you said, how do we go about doing that? I think we do it in a number of ways. First, through having a standing committee on STEM education, and that standing committee gives strategic advice to AFIF on the kinds of studies it should undertake. We do it, secondly, through our publication of our Press Science magazine, which we distribute very widely, and then through the publications that we have. We've done a number that relate to science awareness and science education. For example, inquiry-based science education, policymakers booklet, the pilot program that we're unrolling at the moment. We also have a mentorship project which has not been mentioned, whereby young scientists have, as a result of the inquiry-based science education program, offered to mentor students in high schools, and these students visit their laboratories on a regular basis. We've got a couple of people involved in that. And then I think the next question for the council advisor was about to what extent do we collaborate with the HSRC? Africa Institute, is that what you said? Okay. With HSRC, we don't have formal links, but obviously we interact with them through cohort, and we attend a number of joint meetings. We're, I think, mainly collaborating through the humanities study that we published, so we're in discussion with HSRC about that. We have participated in various meetings that they've had. They just hosted a recent meeting on national health insurance. So we participated in that, and we're busy collaborating with them in this forthcoming World Science, World Social Science Forum conference that we're going to be hosting. So yes, we do interact with the HSLC, but perhaps not as much as we could. Individuals who fall within the HSLC as individuals participate in many, many of our activities. But as an organization, perhaps that could be improved. Councillor Breiner.
Thanks very much, Roseanne. If I may continue on the River Cropper, your question was about my position as a council advisor.
I would like to also just ask you on
I'm trying to think if there's been a specific interaction, and I think the answer has to be at this stage not.
Right, thank you. If I may continue, my election to serve on the council as an advisor, as I explained earlier, took place about a year before I became president. I had not been a council member. And it's a means by which the Council of ASAF can bring on into its ranks members who would be, you know, in another word, would be co-opted for various reasons. Sometimes it's very clear that after the election of the council has taken place, there are certain disciplines or certain areas in which there are gaps and so on. In my case, it was very specifically with a view to be taking up the presidency about a year later. So of course, as soon as I became president, well, in fact, in late October last year, we elected a new council anyway, and my role and my position as advisor fell away. And I was then a full regular member of the council and then elected to serve as president. There's a question about member elections. How does that take place? Well, individuals are nominated by members of the academy. An extremely important part of the process is that the portfolio of the nominee, all the information in the portfolio, has to address both aspects of the mandate of ASAF. In other words, excellence, so in what ways has the person distinguished him or herself scientifically, and then secondly, with regard to service, what sort of role has the person played, and furthermore, what sort of vision do they have for their role as a member of the academy. Nominations come forward, and those are then considered by a committee. Eventually, and the status quo is that eventually the entire membership of the academy, some 400 members, is asked to vote on whether or not to support the nominations. Let me say that this very last part, the voting process, is something that we are not very happy about. One of its weaknesses is that one is asking all members of the academy, irrespective of their discipline, to vote on the suitability of members from, you know, whatever discipline. And for that, and maybe other reasons as well, we tend to have quite a low voting turnout. But we have been studying the election processes of other academies and are likely to be changing ours within the next year to one which has very much more of a discipline-based focus. So that's how that happens. Concerning the humanities and the initiative on the part of the Minister of Higher Education, Minister Nzimande, yes, we are very aware of the activities and, in fact, of plans now to establish an institute for the humanities. We have been continuing our work through our standing committee, but along the way there has been liaison interaction between the two groups, and really we see our role, as with any other activity, as one of providing independent input to, in this case, this particular debate. We have just recently expanded the membership of our standing committee. Again, there were a few gaps there. And in fact, one of the gaps was that we needed to have on our standing committee a member of Minister Nzimande's so-called charter group. So that will certainly facilitate communication between our two groups. But our approach is entirely one of maximum communication between ourselves and the minister's group. Yes.
The question about the scientific writing course. So this was a course initiated for medical students because the funding came from the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. So it's an online course which ultimately is designed to benefit all students, postgraduate students. And the tiered system just means that one progresses from a system whereby tier one is entirely online to tier four, which is the final tier, where there's a mentorship program. And the students can access it whenever they like. They don't get a formal qualification at the end of it. With regard to the question on the nuclear energy safety and what have we done about fracking and shale gas, as part of the nuclear energy safety symposium that we held, there wasn't a discussion about fracking. But certainly fracking is a discussion that we're having as part of a study that we're currently undertaking, which is on the state of green technologies in South Africa. So we're having that debate, and it's very likely that a small part of that report will address the fracking issue. I don't think it's entirety, but it's a portion of it.
If I could just add to that, in fact, it's an important question also for with regard to energy planning in the country generally. We've seen recently, for example, the article by Professor Anton Eberhardt, who is on the National Planning Commission and who's an energy expert, really questioning the plan in the proposal in the Integrated Energy Plan for an increase in nuclear energy while, of course, coal comes down. So his arguments have to do with the abundance of shale gas. He didn't address the issue of fracking in the Karoo in any way, which is the abundance generally globally, and also, in his opinion, a view that the cost of renewable energy is coming down fast enough for it to become a much greater component of our energy mix than has been planned up to now. But the Academy sees for itself a major role, again, with regard to assessing the state of energy in the country, energy research and the like, and then providing advice in what really is quite a complex area. While I'm talking, perhaps I could just take the question about the academia. Yes, in fact, recently, a few months ago, 2 months or so ago, Professor Dyer and I had a meeting with the President and the Executive Officer of the Academie. This had been facilitated through one of our council members, Professor Esther Foster, who is an Academie member, as am I, by the way. We had a very productive, very fruitful meeting with our colleagues in the Academie. Not having had any interaction of this kind, not formally anywhere previously, so we exchanged views, information. I guess the key point for us in ASAF, as conveyed by Professor Danny Carstens, is that the Academy's role, or one of its major roles, is that of promoting science through Afrikaans. So the question is, how best can our two academies collaborate? And we have some plans. At the moment, a proposal is in the process of being developed, and we'll take that forward in an active way. While on that subject, let me just mention that we have also been engaging in discussions with the South African Academy of Engineering, and we see closer collaboration developing between our two academies, and we're also trying to do the same with regard to the Royal Society of South Africa, one of the older academies in the country.
I just want to bring to your attention that you have run out of time, so we are now at 11:45, when we're supposed to finish at 11:30. So I'm trying to say that I'm trying to contact people so that we can try to, because the next session is going to be already over to you.
All right. Thank you, Chair. We'll try our very best. We have, in fact, I think we're just about to come on to the next set of questions. Is that right, President? The next one would be, am I right? It could be the one about our activities with regard to rural development. Do you want to talk?
Okay, with regard to the rural development, I think we've done studies on subsistence agriculture. We're also looking at the role of GMOs. I think that would be the main areas that we would hope address rural development. Perhaps also a study that we did a couple of years ago on local economic development in small towns. So these are two studies with reports published. In terms of collaboration with the HSRC through the HIV/AIDS study, certainly individuals who were working at the HSRC would have been invited to the workshop and can name names who participated, but at an institutional level there was not a formal collaboration to host that workshop because we were hosting with IOM, but individuals certainly did participate. The same with the TB initiative. When we had that workshop, there were individuals from the two centres of excellence in South Africa on TB who attended in their individual capacity. With regard to the indigenous knowledge question, in the State of Humanities in South Africa, that report that we published, there was a whole chapter on indigenous knowledge systems. So it is something that has been addressed through that study. I'm trying to keep the answers brief. The role of ASAF versus NACI, I'm not sure I can give you a brief answer, except to say that we are in discussion. We had a meeting last week with Professor Reedy and I, and representatives from DFT and NACI attended, chaired by the DG. The question about the minding the gap, I think I've already addressed. And then in terms of the last question from yourself, Honourable Chair, about putting forward names to support young scientists. This is something that ASAF does for a number of areas, and we would be only too happy to act as the conduit to put forward names, but at this point, we haven't had contact with the Astronomical Federation that you mentioned, but we've done it in a number of other areas, health, energy, a number of areas. So we would welcome the contact and we would facilitate the recommendation of those names.
I'll tell you what you should do. You see, SANSA is a member of IEF and IEC. So the CEO and the executive of SANSA should be able to provide this because they attend these meetings regularly annually. And I think if you coordinate with them, because I tried to discuss this matter with the former Minister of Science and Technology, and she also didn't know about them, and she said she was going to see how it can be done. But then she changed her mind and went away. But it is quite a very disappointing occasion when you are attending this federation and congress to see all other answers of the world except ours.
Mm.
The last time, I think we heard about, and from my understanding from Dr. Who was it from the director of South? Peter.
Martin.
He was telling me that the other he had tried to try to bring up two or three students in this occasion. But I said myself, I don't know, but as a volunteer, they've always been writing to me saying that I must bring in just for 12 minutes a year for these students who can be present. But I don't know that because I'm not in the space field. But about coordination, what I was meaning about coordination, I understand the coordination where I just come like in the Japanese Forum of Science and Technology Society, where I come as an individual and come as CSIR, receive all meetings there. That's not the coordination I'm talking about, because I'm talking about institutional coordination. And from what I've read from your role in cohorts, that is exactly why you must raise on this issue, because you have a very special role, because you are the secretary of COVID. And that is how exactly you are supposed to be the main coordinator of this event.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. If I could just take 30 seconds on that, on the point about astronomy. Yeah, you know, with SALT and the SK and all of that, we have so much activity in astronomy around the country, postgraduate programs, research and the like. So really, I believe there's no shortage of capable young people to send to these conferences, and that's something that we will work on. I believe that we have responded to all of the questions, Chair, so unless there's anything further, I'll hand it back to you.
Yeah, I think so. If there's anything further, you can liaise and write back to us if you can put the questions across and then you can respond accordingly. But for now, I think we are very thankful for your presentation because we have the delegation already waiting here for 15 minutes or more later than the time they have to start. Thank you very much for coming, and we hope that you come in good. But the coordination role, there are two roles that I want to see from you in the future. The role of coordination as Cohort, as a Secretariat of Cohort, and the role of closing the gap, this bridging thing in education, science education. Those are the two important roles that I think lie with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members.
I think the next delegation must start preparing themselves. We'll take a short break once you prepare to install our system. I'm hoping that the coffee will be outside, so we can take a 10-minute coffee break and then we can start. Thank you very much for coming.
I'm going to go to the next one.
education focused, because the thing is, they're not going to achieve anything if education doesn't come to the party. I'm not an education guy, I use law or whatever stuff, I just don't come from a bad person. You can see I get out of my school and whatever. And I just see so many other people as well, you know? I'll see, yes, it's deadlock. I think it must be done structurally. But I mean, I even look at my nieces and nephews, you know? And now I have a generation of people that they must be helping. These people are gone the way and they must be given something. They're blocking their arms and they're doing it. I mean, what is this? We face what? School closures, no teachers, no textbooks. And we see a gap out of our schools. We hand right up there and this big board of machine gun standing where we say, look. But you don't have school for the next 3 weeks.
The consolation of